Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pod Nuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., coming at you from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And folks, the guest that I have today is also coming at you from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And that is a big deal because he is not from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, but he is here on a special weekend visit and decided to stop by the studios here at MB Systems. I am talking about the man, Stanley Lussant. Stanley, how are you, sir?
Marv, I'm doing well, man. Doing well. I'm out of that heat, so much better.
Well, welcome to South Florida, Bubba.
You ain't lying.
So, Stan, you are here. So, speaking of the heat, we talked earlier, and you told me that you didn't make it down to the beach to dip your toes in the water.
No, listen, it looked good, right? I looked outside the room. I said, look at the beach. There's people on there looking happy. And I walked down to those stairs. My foot touched that burning hot sand. And I realized that this is not for me today. This is not for me. That coupled with the humidity, right?
It is hard to explain to people how hot the sand is on the beach. So if you're not from here and you're not used to it, it's like walking on black tar.
And let me tell you something. I tell folks this all the time. They don't show you this in the pictures, okay? When you see the pictures, you do not notice any of these stuff, any of these things. Mm. And believe me, like I said, I took one dip, my toe took a dip of that sand, and I turned right back around. I said, that's it. Let me go visit Uncle Marv instead.
So before we get started talking, and folks, this is going to be a freestyle program. Notice I did not mention a sponsor. I don't have any housekeeping things to take care of. It is here Sunday afternoon, although I don't know when I'm going to post it, but Sunday afternoon, just hanging with Stan and waiting for the wife to get back so we can eat. But Stan, before we go any further, let's remind people, you've been on the show a couple of times. We had a nice show about customer etiquette about a year ago. We've talked about some other stuff, but let's go back and first tell everybody who you are, your company, what you do, get all that out the way.
All right. I'm Stanley Lussant, principal and founder of Fluid Designs, located in Union, New Jersey, right? Full service MSP shop with some specialization in the legal vertical. I've been in the business now 19 years. Go and figure that one out. But yeah, every day's a new day. Love what we do, and doesn't feel like work. So, but I always like giving back to the industry whenever possible. So taking advantage of this time right now.
All right. So Stanley's here on personal time this trip, but Stanley, you're always traveling around. You do a lot of conferences. You're actually speaking at some of the, you've been at the legal tech conferences that I've been to.
That's correct. So this past year, once again, it was the third year running down at American Bar Association Tech Show, and did do two presentations. I think this year's topics was firewalls. Firewalls in today's law offices. So that's always a good one. Security, right? We can never have enough of that. So, but I get around. I do some speaking engagements. I do write some articles. I've been, featured on Channel Pro and featured in, why am I having a brain fart right now? It is Sunday, right? The day of rest, but yes. I'm not doing much rest, but if you know me, you know me.
All right. So down here visiting, getting some personal time in, and the fact that you have built your business to the point where you can travel. You left on a Friday, so that must have been nice to get out of the office and head down to sunny South Florida.
That is correct. And you know what? I tell folks this all the time. I actually talked to somebody the other day who says he just took his first vacation in 15 years and cannot stop looking at plane tickets now. And reality is, the house is not going to burn down. And I think most of us need to come to terms with that. There's a fear that if we go away, everything is going to, cave in. And when we come back, we're going to just find nothing but ashes. But that's not the case. I think, we have to rely on our networks and our resources, right? For the smaller shops out there. You can partner up with some local people in your area. Yep. And if there are things that need to happen, needing a physical presence, you can have them. But obviously, let's not discount the remote nature, right?
Absolutely. Right.
That as long as you have an internet connection, you can do what you need to do. And one of my requirements for any flight is making sure that there's Wi-Fi, even if I have to pay for it. But being connected allows me to essentially be away while still kind of being in tune with what needs to happen. But, you know, just able to kind of weave a little bit of work into the wait time and make sure that, you know, the house is definitely not burning down.
Right. So, yep. I remember last month when I went to the wedding up north, that was the concern. They're like, well, what happens? Because I took off Thursday and Friday. And for most of my clients, they're not used to me being away two straight days. They will get used to that soon because it's going to be happening more and more. But it was the idea of saying, look, I have remote access because it doesn't matter to you whether I'm in the office or out of town. I'm still able to remote into your office and do what I normally do. If somebody needs to be there, you have met my text that I can send if necessary. And of course, partner support. You know, if it's phone service, you know, you can call the phone vendor. Mm-hmm. If it's, you know, something else with a system that's died, you know, we've got support on those products for that very reason. So you're not depending on me 100%. You're depending on all the resources and partnerships that I have that I bring to the table. And sounds like you do a lot of the same thing.
Yeah. And I do want to note one other thing in regards to that is that, you know, one of the things that I definitely stopped doing is you don't have to let people know that you're not going to be around. Because guess what, right? Most of our relationships are people calling us or us calling them when we see a problem. And guess what? You can go away and nothing happens, right? So you just put someone on notice. You created a conversation, you know, that maybe didn't even need to happen because right. Maybe nothing happens at all. So I do think that's just important to note, you know, so I don't do the out of office reply, you know, message, you know, and all that. And we're going to get back to you, right?
You know, that's funny. I don't do that either. I have a handful. When I say handful, like less than five customers, I will tell I'm going to be away. Nobody else needs to know.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I could be on a beach solving your problem. You don't need to know that I was on a beach solving your problem. So welcome to the world of mobility, right? Mm-hmm. Lovely.
So we were talking earlier. So let's talk about, why don't we talk about remote partner partnerships, things like that. So the companies that help you do that sort of invisible support, meaning they don't know where you are when you do the support. What types of things have you done in your business to kind of set that up?
Well, the first thing, of course, is remote access tools, right? I mean, that's the basic. Obviously, at some point in time, you know, it wasn't delivered through an RMM solution necessarily, right? You know, that's the team viewers, the log me ins, the go to assists, you know, all these other platforms that existed. Actually, before that, I remember what I used to do was VPN in and then run
real VNC or tight VNC.
Exactly. Right. Developed by AT&T, God knows when. So that was the way, right, where you would tap into the office and be able to have remote access. So every computer you set up or server, I know people are like probably saying don't put VNC on servers, but in the beginning, I'm sure we all did. Right. So or RDP. Right. You know, before it was inherently insecure.
RDP, it's a bad word right now, isn't it?
Oh, no. Well, yeah, outside the VPN, inside the VPN, you're okay. But in essence, that was the thing, right? So we would use those tools to be able to do what we needed to do in that regard. Of course, as time has evolved, like, you know, like you mentioned, you know, we've moved more towards the RMM solutions, right? Which have remote access tools built into them, you know, 9 out of 10 times. So now you rely on those tools to install their remote access, and then you run it and do what you need to do that way. So that's where we are now, as far as I'm concerned.
So you mentioned RMM. Let's first start with how much are you doing through your RMM? Because I know that some people use it just for visibility. Some use it just for remote access. Others have built-in AV, web protection, all of that stuff. Which one are you using, and what do you have set up on your stuff?
So currently, I'm using SolarWinds. That's my product there. Their RMM tool tied in with their MSP manager. I will say that the big thing for me with the RMM is really the visibility in terms of things going wrong. You know, it's like the other day I had a client where, you know, QuickBooks is a major thing for them and the database manager stopped, 80 times, right? So, hey, what's going on there? So really understanding what's happening on the network in terms of devices actually being available and the services being available, so then we can obviously respond and give that proactive approach. I have another situation where a client's server is 7 years old, right? They knew they needed to. Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. But the thing is, when we first put it in, we said, hey, look, small business, we're going to make this thing, have this thing ride out to 5 years. And, this is what it's probably going to cost at the time. I mean, literally telling them this and putting it in. And now we're 2 years past that date and things are just going bad. I actually stopped my RMM from sending me the alerts of performance issues and redirected it to them. So they're like, we're getting these alerts all day, every day, 90% this time and this and that. And I said, this is where we are, right? Yep. I said, I'm showing you, visibly showing you that your system is at the brink. So you don't want to listen to me. I've done everything I'm supposed to do. So now I'm going to redirect the nuisance alerts from me to you. So let me know when you're ready to fix it.
Let me ask you a question. This is going to go off topic here, but I had a discussion with some techs the other day where most techs will try to, tell people your servers are going to last 3 to 5 years. And then at that point, you have to upgrade. And some people get past the 5 years and then don't keep the servers under warranty. I have in my service agreements with those customers, it's not everybody, but the ones that are under agreement, part of that agreement states that if we don't replace the server, you're keeping it under warranty as long as there is a warranty available. So I use HP for my servers, and you can purchase the HP care packs, and I make my customers purchase that every year. And somebody was surprised that I was able to have my customers do that. Do you do that on this server that is 7 years old?
Funny that you mentioned that. So yes, that client is under contract. We always get the care packs, but they chose not to renew it. And I think it's almost a cat and mouse game because they know it needs to be replaced. So they're essentially gambling in one way or another. Now, part of that is probably our own fault, right? Because we have certain things in place, right? We have a DATO BDR and things of that nature. So they're like, but we're protected, right? But they're right. They're actually not wrong, right?
True.
If that server goes offline in 15, 20 minutes, I can launch that DATO and they're going to be back up and running. So it's actually an interesting insurance game. Now, my only problem with, I think we talked about this last time. I love agreements, right? I'm a contract guy and lock you in and make sure to deliver on our side, right? And if we don't deliver, you have an out. One of the problems with, in my opinion, is putting certain things in. So the client's going to say, well, Marvin, or well, Stanley, I'm not going to renew that. I'm not paying for that warranty. And then now your recourse is to fire the client, right? Or break them out of the agreement, right? Because you're you're violating the agreement. So in my way, and I'm sure we can have a clause in there with some financial consequence, but it almost works against you in one way or another, depending on your nature or relationship with the client. So, the whole forceful thing, what I like actually is an agreement that says, if it's not under warranty, it is not a covered device, and anything I do on that device will cost you more money.
So that's where I'm toying with this, because for right now, as long as the device is up and working, I'll cover it in terms of, doing the monthly stuff that we normally do. But if it dies, obviously you got to pay whatever to get it up and running again. And so that's where I think the debate is, if you have them under warranty, but here's the thing, it's not my warranty.
No,
it's HP's warranty.
Correct.
So, you're going to fight with HP about getting that piece of equipment back up or not. I'll be there if HP says they can't help you and we'll restore from DATO to a new server, but that's the way it is. But I do that for the satisfaction of knowing that if something happens, we're not in this battle of, well, you're taking care of it.
Yeah, it's a CYA, right? It's a CYA. And like I said, I think my whole approach to people not doing things they need to do has always been make it monetary. because for some reason, no one seems to care about anything else unless it's monetary, right? When it comes down to dollars. So like I said, so, hey, your agreement is, you know, $2,000 a month, right? Where all you can eat, everything is included. Now this server is out of warranty. Now that means all normal support, right? That I would provide, whatever it is, upgrading software, this and that. I'm now telling you that that is now, those are now billable events because you chose not to renew the warranty or replace this piece of equipment. So now all of a sudden you go, okay, well, hold on a second. If we do, oh, by the way, here's a list of all those things we've been doing, by the way, right? So now all of a sudden, oh, and you sign the agreement, which you're still in, that's that you say, hey, because I didn't renew the warranty, this thing is now dropped off as a supported item on the maintenance contract. So guess what? You are now paying for anything and everything that I have to do with it. And like I said, whether it was a maintenance issue or not, it's on you. And all of a sudden, things get done the way they need to get done. But they were under a older contract. So the new contracts have that provision in there. So
do you, because I'm assuming that, because I know with SolarWinds, it's not like you're going to take it out of the dashboard. It's still going to be in the dashboard, even though it's not under warranty or contract. So do you keep that as part of the monthly fee? And then do you line item all that stuff that was used to be covered under it? How do you differentiate what's covered and not covered if it comes to like something like a server, you know, in terms of updates and, you know, antivirus, you know, definition updates and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, so it will still be in my SolarWinds, right? And obviously, mainly that's for a convenience factor from our standpoint with things turned off, though, right? With certain things turned off. And, you know, maybe none of the automation is going to happen. And or if it does, that you're going to bill for it, right? Okay. You know, that's the whole point is, like I said, all these things that were normally covered, right, which we can all go into our dashboards and show things that have been done, you know, 300, you know, tickets have been opened and closed, per se. And you can say, hey, look, this was all covered, but not anymore, right? And just to get them to understand it. And this isn't a money grab, right? You know, what we're just trying to all do here is just get the clients to do what they should be doing. I tell you this, I've heard a different approach to this entire thing, which is offer clients a server at start with a lease option with no buyback. So they have to get a new one at the end of the term because they have to give the server back. So I actually know some techs that do that. Like instead of, you know, but in my opinion, maybe you get a client who says, I just want to buy it outright. You know, I have the money, but you know, who's got this down? The copy guys. The copy companies have this down. Nobody buys a copier.
No.
No one thinks twice about at the end of a lease with a copier, a new one coming in. They've done it. The entire copy industry has done what we should do, right? Or that direction, because we know over time, the hardware is going to get worse and worse, right? It's not going to do what we need it to do. So the question is, how do we, I guess, as an industry, right, latch on to what the copy folks have done in terms of literally getting a new one every 3 years and the customer always happy. Oh, they're going to give us a bigger, faster, better machine. This one isn't going to jam like the last one, you know, But you know, but the thing is no one argues it,
right?
They don't argue. Oh, it's going to be another, you know, $400 or $500 a month, right? It's an evergreen and they never stop paying on a copier.
No, they don't. And the only thing that ever becomes an issue is when the tech shows up, swaps out the copier, leaves, and all of a sudden, hey, where's our address book? Why can't we scan? You know, but it's not the copier company's issue. It's our issue.
Oh, always. I had a whole bout with a copier company the other day. So I was telling Marvin earlier about a client where we were physically moving them into new space. Obviously, we got all the network wiring done, things of that nature, but had no networking equipment in there because it was at the old site. Well, the copier company was bringing in the new copier, and I let them know, hey, guys, we have no networking equipment on site. I mean, you guys can program the copier, but you won't be able to set up things like scanning or scan to email because there is no network there technically, right? The hardware hasn't been moved yet. And they just didn't get that. And they literally left notes like, we tried to do what we had to do, but, you know, we can't. We're like, we told you that. We knew that. So you could have picked a day to physically bring in the copy and then come back, you know, a few days later, do the rest. But, you know, there's always going to be a constant bout between IT folks and copy companies. That's for sure.
Yeah. I told my copier story a couple of weeks ago. I'm frustrated with them. The customer gave me one day's notice that they're changing out their copiers for 6 locations.
That's not enough time? That sounds like ample time, of course.
So it was fun. So I had to rearrange my schedule for 3 straight days so that I could, you know, properly set up DHCP reservation with the new machines, made sure they could scan before the guys left, made sure the copy, you know, company transferred the address book. And, you know, of course, the client's like, why are you billing us for this?
Come on, Mark. Why are you doing this to me today, man? Well, this is the problem, right? We always fight to manage expectations, but what happens is this,
but it's
right?
It's not just expectations.
No, but it's not you, but it's the copy company.
Well,
right?
That's the thing. The customer's like, well, the copy guy said they would take care of everything. I'm like, you know that they can't.
Correct. We've been through this before. This is not the first time, right? And every time, it's like the first time, every time. And that's the thing. Copy companies, well, look, they're in sales, right? They don't care, right? The guy or woman, you know, whoever shows up, they're selling, right? And their job is to get you to sign this new lease and this new agreement. And, you know, they're going to solve all your problems, right? Then what do? They pass it down to the next person in line who then his job is to implementation and tech and whatever. And then it finally gets to the people who are actually delivering the copy, right? The copier and taking the old one out. So it's usually 3 different sets or 3 different people, you know, from start to finish. And by the way, you never hear from the salesperson ever again, right? So until the next time they need to tell you. Right. So it just, and like you said, it becomes our problem. And I'll do you one better. So that copy company I just told you, well, you know, my guy subleasing space to another guy and the other guy is going to share his copy. And by the way, they're on 2 separate, physically separate networks, not sharing an internet connection, 2 separate routers. And the other guy's like, what do you mean you can't get me up and running today? I said, well, you have to be connected, right? We have to interconnect you and we have to buy some equipment to do that because you guys are on 2 separate networks. And he's like, oh, I thought it just could be just done real quick, you know? So yeah, there's a level of, you know, people's expectations and we try to manage them and you can't manage it all the time because people think what they think, right? So, but like you said, at the end of the day, you end up writing an invoice. So it just is what it is.
It is. So you mentioned earlier customer expectations. I mean, it almost seems that we have to have partner expectations as well.
100%.
So one of the things that I always try to do with my customers is, you know, obviously I try to stay on top of when things are changing. Don't always get to do that because they don't tell me when they're going to do the copiers because they don't see that as a network item until it's too late. But trying to stay ahead of when they're doing stuff and saying, okay, before you make a decision, talk with me so that I can understand what's happening so that I can make sure it can be done in accordance with the rest of your network.
Yeah. And what you're doing is, you know, once again, you're playing your role as CIO. Mm-hmm. Okay. The trusted advisor, all the, you know, fun titles that we've created for ourselves. And reality is when that happens, I'm sure every one of us feels good, right? You're like, wow, this client gets it,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
This client gets it. And sometimes the phone calls are for something that might be considered silly, but you're just happy that they're actually picking up the phone, calling you and involving you because they understand the value that you bring, right? Some people don't want to call you, whether it's because they think it's going to be a bill, it's going to come from this conversation or whatever the case is. Or it's just simply out of sight, out of mind, right? You know, there is a level of like, well, I just didn't know, right? No one told me, even though you've tried to drill it into their heads 1,000 times.
Right.
Hey, when you're doing anything that involves the computers, the network, anything of the sort, you need to call me. Well, what's the story you told me about someone who decided that they can get wireless access points that didn't match what you have in all their other locations, right? You know, oh, because the folks that ran the cable said that they can just give me these 2 things on top of what they're already doing.
Right.
And you're like, running the cables and running the network aren't the same thing.
2 separate things. Yes.
Right. So no, their job was to run the cable. My job was to then come in and make the things work that need to work and bring in the rest of the equipment. So yeah, there's a level of like, I don't know, or I think I know, and I really don't know, right? What is it? You don't know what you don't know, right? So I think it's very, very interesting thing. But in reference to the partner talk, yeah, we as partners or companies that we work with, we have to understand that the same thing that you just mentioned with customers can happen with us. That things happen before we figure it out, or things happen, or a company gets acquired, or whatever the case is, that can literally change our structure with some of these vendors that we work with or quote partner with.
Yeah. Well, of course. I mean, of course, the latest biggest story of a partner issue, Microsoft, trying to say that your internal user rights are going to be taken away. And after 2 days of somebody big enough complaining, they're like, oh, well, we're going to push that off a while. So yes, your internal user rights are still there. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm sure you've heard that Microsoft originally decided that if you purchase the Action Pack and you were using the software from the Action Pack for your own business, if you are installing Windows Server, Windows 10, for your desktops, Office 365 through the Action Pack, which I do, that starting, July 2020 or something like that, that you would not be able to use that any longer for your internal office. You could only use it for labs and things of that nature. So Microsoft just announced that last week, and 2 days later, unannounced it, that they're going to hold off on pushing that through. But there's an example of a partner decision affecting our business. I mean, some businesses probably pretty big financially when you talk about the number of things that you can do with the Action Pack.
Yeah, I mean, and that's been a long-standing benefit for folks, right?
Yeah.
And my whole thing around the conversation wasn't necessarily Microsoft's decision, but everyone's reaction to it, in the sense of not wanting to come to terms about our actual position as partners with some of these vendors, right? So,
well, the term partner is a loose translation, right?
It's a marketing term, right? Right. This is, think about business cards, right? Marv, you could write CEO, you could write founder, principal, mm-hmm. right? All these different words, and you try to figure out, we all know all the financial advisors that are vice president of such and such, right? There's 1,000 of them that work in the same place, right? But it's a term. It's something to try to make us feel good about, the railing we're going to receive, I like to say, in one way or another, right?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we are just a vessel, right? We're a vessel for them to get what they want to get. And guess what? On the other side, there is a benefit for us because, listen, if Microsoft didn't have this OS, most of us wouldn't have most of our businesses. But we need to understand that we are not the creator, okay?
Right.
We do not own anything. In fact, I had a whole conversation with somebody online talking about, web development and who owns a website, right? Guess what? Like a photographer, if you take a photo, you own that photo, even if you say, Stan, I took it for you. Until you sign the rights over to that photo, it is your photo. We don't own these Microsoft products that we're using. Microsoft is allowing us a license to use it. Same way they're allowing us the ability to sell them or resell them. So we never own anything at the end of the day. And I think that's what folks don't like to come to terms with, that these guys can pull something out from under us in any shape or form. Just like HP did with the printers, right?
Yeah,
and the printer supplies, right? They have not backed off of it. Life has gone on, right? They're still selling product. And, the smaller, resellers have gotten kicked out of that, right? Hey, took away the blue carpet program, for instance. I used to love that thing, right?
Yep.
Get computers, sell a new computer. You get a spiff on the back end, this nice reloadable Visa gift card. But at the end of the day, these are also all publicly traded companies, and we forget that. Meaning that they have to answer to shareholders about the bottom line.
Bottom line, yep.
And sometimes you and I will be on the chopping block so they can get what they need to get to look good to these folks. And you know, I don't know if I can see anything wrong with that because they're running a business the same way you and I are, right? And the same way somebody may say, hey, you know, I don't want my salesperson, you know, making 20% commissions anymore. Again, it's the same kind of conversation. But until you create something and you are the owner of this thing at inception, it's very hard, in my opinion, to really believe that you have full control over what happens and how it happens, you know?
Control. Yeah. And you mentioned HP. We talked about Microsoft. I mean, all of the companies that have, especially the ones that have gone public, like you said, even, you know, when I talk about the products that I use HP, I use SolarWinds like you do. I have Ruckus, who has, you know, they were acquired last year. My handheld tools, which were Fluke and then NetScout, and now another company name that will be announced shortly soon. I mean, all of these changes are coming about and we have no control at all.
No, and guess what? The only thing that we know for sure is there will always be change, right? There'll always be a new marketing term. There'll always be a new hungry company trying to change things, right? But like I said, if we think about Microsoft, what are you going to do? You're going to go to your clients and rip out every Microsoft product, right? We're going to go all Apple. Oh, well, let's talk about Apple, right?
Linux.
Right. Okay.
Okay, but Apple, No,
but let's talk about Apple. Okay. So how many Apples are there? One. How many people make Apple OS? How many people make Apple systems? It's one company. It's literally one company, right? Everybody is reselling this one company. If you have partner status, which we all know that's hard to get impossible. But the thing is, if you build an ecosystem around them and they wake up tomorrow and change their minds, guess what? You're at the mercy because there's only one.
Well, they do that all the time when they change their code. They'll lock out code, and how many app developers all of a sudden their product no longer works because of an update?
Yeah. And like I said, I think you just have to come to terms with, and I know you mentioned it a few times and I keep harping on it, ownership. And what I like to do is, you know, my job at the end of the day is to what? Is to be able to take the tool. I call these all tools, right? A computer, Microsoft operating system, a phone, right? A cell phone. All these things are a tool, right? It's a tool for me to help somebody else do what they need to do to accomplish a task. And once you understand that your value comes in the way that you help them to deliver the tools, but not only deliver the tools, but how to utilize them, right? And to their benefit, I think you're going to understand your place, right? And I think, like I said, I've heard the trusted advisor word or you know, I'm your CIO, all those words thrown out. But reality is we are facilitators. And some of these things are just a means to an end, right? Do you want to sell computers all day? Do you want to sell a wireless keyboard and mice? You know, no, you do that stuff to keep the client around. You do that stuff so you can deliver the big deliverables that you have for them, right? So you're sticky with them. So they understand that you're the person they need to call when they need things to happen. So I think once you realize that, you understand where you're pricing and where you're going to make your money, which is on the delivery of services, maybe not on some of the services themselves.
Okay. So let's take a quick shift here because we kind of, this kind of got serious real fast.
Oh, yeah. I got real deep, man. It's like we were in church. It is Sunday.
That's right. So in terms of the fact, so we were talking about the ability to be able to do our thing, run our business, take time off, enjoy life. So what are some things that you are doing in terms of looking forward with your business?
So I feel like I've been in deep thought. I've been reading some books, right? Okay. I think I'm on the E-Myth Revisited, which you love.
It's up there.
Listen, you've told me about that book. I think I'm a third of the way in. I also got Pumpkin Plan.
Pumpkin Plan, yeah.
Is coming up next. And then I think I read David Goggins' book, Can't Hurt Me, I think it was called. And that was, he's a military guy, right?
Okay, yeah.
And then, you know, which kind of is all the self-help and, you know, kind of like pretty much get up and do. And then another book I read was a short one. And I think, I don't know if you heard this guy's speech, which was Make Your Bed. Right? Which is every morning, do one thing, okay? Accomplish a task every morning. That way that sets you up for the day. So with that said, I just, you know, I'm in the reading mode right now. I'm just sucking it all up, taking all the knowledge in. But one of the things for me is, yeah, I go away 3-4 days at a time, right? You know, a Thursday to Monday or Friday to Tuesday kind of thing. But I want to be able to be away for a week, right? I want to be able to be away and turn that phone off. So the question is, what do I have to do? What kind of systems do I have to create for the business to allow that to happen? And I do think that a lot of us, whether we're in the IT space or not, a lot of small business owners, we tend to be the center of our business. And my goal is, how do I not be the center of the business? Right. There's surefire ways of doing that. People have done it, right? But in the E-Myth, right, he talks about the technician turned entrepreneur, right?
Absolutely.
And the three different types of personalities you're fighting with. So I think it's applicable to most of us and maybe even our clients.
That is a great book, and it's on my shelf. And since Stanley's in the studio, I can point to it over here. Michael Gerber, The E-Myth Revisited. And there's actually a couple of books over there. I've got The E-Myth Manager, and I've got, there's one other, The Contractor, yes. All three of those books I have used to kind of set some stuff up here, but they really do talk about systemizing your business, which I think the best word that techs understand is automation. Setting up your business so that a lot of these things are automated, that they don't necessarily require you to be hands-on. There are some tickets that you can set up that when the ticket comes in, there's a task assigned with an automatic script that will try to remediate that for you. So that is a great book, actually a several set of great books by Michael Gerber. I will put that link in the show notes so you can go look at those books.
And I think in regards to automation, that also is something that allows, like you just said, some more free time, right? Because I do believe that our barrier of entry has been lowered, right? Because of tools and RMMs. And it's just the nature of the business, right? But I don't know if there's anything wrong with that. And like, you know, I think we talked about last time, you know, instead of this big company having, 25 level one techs, you now need 25 level three techs, right? It's kind of like an inverse situation where you kind of need less higher level individuals, which actually helps to automate and to do some of these things that that are mentioned in that book,
right,
for instance.
That is true. All right. What else you got thinking going on there?
Oh, man. I feel like we did a lot, right? I think we did a lot. But you know what? What else you got? You got Power of Focus. I didn't read that.
Power of Focus is a tough book. Let me just say that. That's a tough
book. Do you have to be able to focus to read the Power of Focus?
I think you might have to focus. Okay. And I could not focus through the entire book. So,
by the way, it's funny that you got a book up there that says Starting a Home-Based Business, which is probably the complete opposite of the E-Myth, actually. Right?
So some of those books, I'll be honest, some of those books I just got, and I got them when I started in the first few years, just because of the title. And I thought, let me look at this and see if there's anything in it, because I would buy books, and even if I took one thing from it, that's what I would do. And so a lot of those books are ones that I took something from and kept. There's a lot of books I actually threw out.
Wait, I got a question. So now that you're this avid reader, all of a sudden, I'm just kidding. Oh, with you. Yeah. No, if you can go back in time, I'm going to ask you a question. If you can go back in time to when you started out, like people say, knowing then what you know now, what would you have done different?
Wow. Because, so first of all, that is a multi-layered question, because the mistakes that I made, because one, you want to go back and basically try to avoid all the big mistakes. And of course, one of the big mistakes that I'll say early on was that I did not. Now, let me first go back and say, I'm a guy who got a business degree in college. I've been a part of Junior Achievement, where that is an organization that as a young person, you were supposed to learn about how to run a business.
Oh, so all the things you didn't listen to, got it.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where I did fall into the trap where I thought, hey, I've done this for a few years. I'm a tech. I've seen what my boss did, because I worked at a computer repair shop. And I saw all the things that I thought he did wrong. I didn't see all the things he did right.
Correct. That's usually how it works. And I could do it better and get paid more.
Yep. So one of the things that I did not do was I did not put in place the people that I needed for things like attorney, accountant, all of those things where I thought I would do those down the road if I need it. Mm. Okay, you know what? There should have been no if at all. Those are things that I should have done from the very beginning, because I did get into a little bit of money issue where I was trying to do the estimated taxes instead of just, you know, doing them every month like I should have, or having my accountant take care of it and make sure that I paid myself a salary and, you know, Uncle Sam got theirs and it was, you know, on par every paycheck. I didn't do that. So there's something that I would say that from the beginning, make sure you set your business up properly with all of the facets that you need, you know, in terms of setting up the right structure, getting your accountant in place, getting your attorney in place, getting it physically sound so that you can make sure all the stuff that needs to be done legally is done.
So the foundation, right? Yes. You got to make sure the foundation is right.
Yep.
No, you're right about that. You're 100% right. And those are the pitfalls that come at you when you don't even know it, right? You just wake up one day and there's a letter in the mail and you're like, what is this?
IRS, you owe $4,000 in taxes. What?
Yeah. Well, and to your point, one of the things that I feel like that happens, and I think I see it in a lot of businesses, is there's also a reason why you didn't spend that money. And the reason you didn't spend the money is because either A, you didn't have it at the time, or B, you needed it to survive. Or maybe not. But I do think that one of the struggles is, you know, for us to take a step back and realize that some of that resource or financial resource has to be put back into business, right, whether it's through other people.
Well, that's the thing. Yes. In terms of knowing. Now, what I thought I did right was I made sure that I had 3 months, you know, of money set aside that I knew that, okay, I'm good for 3 months. And I know a lot of techs today start with the idea of you don't need a lot of money to start a tech business.
Yeah, because it's service-based. All I need is me to be able to do a job.
But if you're going to set up a business where you're going to, now, obviously it's different if you're doing it part-time. It's different if you're partnering with somebody and you're able to get a lot of that structure set up. If you have a customer base, already, but if you've got to build that customer base and you have no idea if you're going to have an appointment at the end of the week, if you're going to have enough money to pay your rent, you've got to set yourself up to get all that stuff rolling. So setting up the infrastructure is key, and then being able to know your market and know what it is you have to do to get out there. And I don't care if you call it hustle, I don't care if you call it market.
Grit, right? All the terms.
You still have to go get the business.
So I got a question. What do you think about, all of a sudden I became the interviewer, right? So what do you think about, so Marv, what do you think about, you know, from a financial situation, right? A component. So, you know, somebody wakes up tomorrow with $1 million in their hands and say, hey, I'm going to open up an IT shop, right?
Don't.
You know, do you think that money is the biggest factor to some level of success in our industry, or is it that desire to solve a problem for somebody, right? And just that kind of spearheads you down. I remember talking to a buddy who was in New Mexico, and he said, hey, there was somebody selling Office 365 or whatever at a loss, and they just looked at it as that loss was a marketing cost. And that when they spend $1 million, I think, worth of this, you know, this marketing expense, then they'd raise the prices up or, you know, try to cultivate that client base to, you know, some higher revenue products, right? And I feel like small folks don't have the ability to do any of that. But what do you think? Do you feel like, you know, just being able to have a pot of money to hire all those people you just said that you need, the accountant, the lawyer, the this, the that, you know, and support staff, and walk into an office with 10 people already in there, do you think that's, you can throw money at it to create success?
Listen, that's probably going to be one of those where it depends, because money alone is not going to give you the answer. I mean, you know, we have seen companies, big companies with big pockets, not be able to sustain themselves because they thought that having the money would be enough. Well, we'll just go out and buy what we need. But you still have to do, now in the IT industry, there are some things that, you know, we have to kind of separate out because software business is different than IT support. IT support is different than a computer repair shop, which is different than if you want to just simply market backup and recovery, which, you know, some people literally will specialize in those types of things. So it really depends on what your business model is, depends on who your customer is. Because if you have money, but you don't have good systems in place, doesn't matter. People are going to basically not get the result that they want. They're not going to get their system service. If you've got problems in, you know, here's an example. I had a fight with a customer who, in the beginning, they didn't want to spend the money to get new updated systems. They had some stuff that was outdated. And I said, no, you have to get new systems. There's no way around it. So then we got new systems. Problems were solved for a period of time. Then, of course, it came time for the next round of stuff. And they were good because they basically got to the point where they said, look, we're going to set aside this much money every single time. And so just keep us updated and we should be good. Well, this was so long ago that as things changed, software updates would break things. Ransomware became an issue. Well, money alone wasn't going to be the issue. You had to implement systems and policies and procedures, and, you know, end users had to start doing different things. You had to allow us to do maintenance on the computers, where they just thought, we'll just get a new computer, that'll solve it, right? No, your habits are part of the problem. And so in the same way that I had to explain that to the customer, that just because we get a new computer doesn't mean the problem's solved. All you did was ignore the problem because it's probably still there if it's in the network or if it's in the user or something like that. So in the same way, businesses, IT owners, techs have to look at, just because you got money behind you, you know, are you doing the things that are right by your customer policy-wise? Are you taking care of them? Are you, you know, responding in a decent enough time? You know, just because you have an SLA, are you meeting the SLA? Or are you telling the customer, look, we're going to give you the best effort. And 90% of the time, the best effort is, you know, under 24 hours. The other, you know, 10%, it's 48 hours. Is that okay with the customer? There are so many factors in that. So for a small business, now, you heard me say no when you first started to ask the question.
If I had a million dollars,
I probably would not start an IT business. I probably would be looking at something else, mainly from the standpoint of, I want to make that money work for me in a different way. So I may not parlay that money into my business. I may set that somewhere else. And if I still wanted to do IT, I would force myself to learn how to sustain my business without that $1 million.
Okay. No, that's very reasonable, because I just think about resources. And sometimes people feel that because they don't have resources, they can't do certain things. And essentially, you know, it's a half baked, right? Sometimes that's the case and sometimes it's not.
Well, I can tell you this. So you're probably thinking of the techs that are trying to get started and, you know, full scale run an MSP right out of the block. That may be difficult without some money, because you've got those upfront cost of onboarding. If you've got, you know, appliances like Datto, where you've got to convince customers to buy the appliance, or you're going to finance that appliance for them. So you've got to have money in some sense to start an MSP if you're trying to go full scale right out of the block. So I can see that being an issue for some people, where if you don't have resources to get a lot of that stuff taken care of, get your infrastructure, you know, whether you got to get an office space that you can put a tech in who can sit there and respond to those tickets, you know, a lot of that money you're not going to get right up front unless you can pre-bill your customers for every little thing that they're going to do.
Correct. Well, you got to be able to float, right?
Yeah.
Look, I'll tell you right now, depending on the nature of me and a client, I don't necessarily ask for hardware money up front. I'm just telling you, sometimes things need to get done. We just order it, right? So, and I trust that when we come over and deliver it, you know, for longtime clients, that we're going to get it. Now, this isn't the case with a client that, you know, we just met yesterday. So with that said, right, we still have to purchase everything, right? Yep. And we got to be able to float, you know, and have, like you said, some cash reserves to be able to pay our bills when they come in, while, you know, on the other side, waiting to get our money from our client. So 100%. And whoever does government work knows all about waiting for their money. I mean, we don't, for that specific reason.
Yeah, alone. I've had opportunities to do that, and I just said, no, I cannot. So going back to your original question of, you know, things to do in the beginning, that if I knew then what I know now, I would
run.
I tell you what, I'd have read a lot of those books sooner. And gotten myself a better foundation. That's really what it is. You have to understand what it is you're doing before you do it. And I know that a lot of companies have been started, and some have been successful by just somebody going out there and just getting out there and doing it. Doesn't work for everybody though.
Well, one of the things I've always said, and it's me personally, and I don't know what your experience has been. Like I said, it's been 19 years. I have not had too many clients that I seen blow up, right? So if a client had 10 people when we first started, it feels like 10 years later, they still just have 10 people. There's not, and I know those stories exist where you're like, man, I got this client. It was two people working in a basement, you know? And all of a sudden it's like, wow, there are 150 people working. That hasn't been my experience. I've talked to people that have had those stories. And I would, believe me, I would love to have those stories. But, you know, and I just think it just goes into the state of affairs of small business and small business success stories, and then growth rates of businesses that are actually in play, right?
Right.
So, you know, and that applies to, you know, folks in our own industry and running our own businesses. So I just... I do think that it's interesting to see, and I feel like those people that have had that crazy growth, it's definitely a completely different mindset and how they look at business.
It is interesting because I've had a few of those. Not that they've had explosive growth, but I've had, you know, let's say my largest customer now was a company that when I met them was less than 70 users. They're now 195. That's a pretty decent growth. But I've had customers that have been the same 4 years. I've had actually one, my longest tenured customer so far, 21 out of the 22 years that I've been in business, started out as a pretty decent law firm with about 20 plus people. Now it's just him and his secretary.
Oh yeah. We've seen it go the other way too. Seen it go the other
they're
way.
They're still my client. They still want me to take care of them. But I think the biggest thing, for instance, like, you know, I have always taken the mindset as best I can. It hasn't always worked. I'm not going to say that I've had, you know, no flops, because I have, but the customers that I've had have stayed with me because I have done as best a job as I could to keep them up and running, to be as honest with them as I can. You know, if I can't do something, I can't do it. I'm not going to try to, you know, blow smoke up your, you know, black afro and try to say that I can do it when I can't. But be as honest with them as I can, take care of them the best as I can. I've had my second biggest customer right now. You and I talked about this earlier, is a customer like for the first 6-7 years, didn't pay me squat. You know, it was a referral customer that I helped them out one time. And when I thought that I would get them as a client, because they ran into an issue where they, so I don't know why I'm laughing.
You can laugh. I don't know either, but
a customer that was using one of the case management systems. And one of the requirements was that it had to be Windows 7, Windows 8, or something like that. But they decided, their tech that had them at the time decided that she was going to put them on Windows Vista.
Oh yeah, that was a great idea.
Not supported. And bottom line is that the consultant that referred me, when she went in to the customer like a year and a half later, they had been fighting with these problems for a year and a half. And they finally got to the point where they said, you know, you got to come in and look at this. And she got there and she said, Marvin wouldn't have set you up this way. What happened? We didn't go with Marvin. And she said, you need to go with Marvin. So that was a customer that I actually got because of that. And it was still 6 or 7 years later, after I got them, that they finally said, look, Marvin, we want you to take care of us on a regular basis. They are now my second biggest customer in terms of monthly recurring revenue, back when they didn't want to spend a dime unless they absolutely had to. And it was just because I stayed with it, did what I told them I was going to do, didn't lie to them, took care of them as best I could. You know, there were still issues. They still had, you know, a virus here and there. They still had stuff happen, but.
Some people say that was a long sales cycle, but but you're 100% right. I mean, I've always said is you provide the proper solution, right? Whether you choose to go with it or not, that's on you. And I remember in the early days, you know, I used to try to do what? I used to try to be what I say in the client's pocket. And hey, you know what? They're not going to spend $10,000 on this, you know, and give them some alternate solution that would eventually come back to bite me because maybe something may not perform as expected, right, or last as long. And then next thing you know, here we are doing this all over again, right? The right way the next time. So I stopped that. I now give people the proper solutions to do exactly what we needed to do based on our specs and, you know, planning for growth and capacity if required. And life is better that way. You get to sleep at night with no headaches, right? You know, just, and like I said, if they say no, that's on them, right? Yeah. I did what I was supposed to do. So,
well, you and I did talk earlier too about why do we use the products we use? Why do we go with the vendors that we go with? And it's exactly that. We know them. We trust them. They perform.
Correct.
And if they don't perform, they're there to fix it, correct, which is my biggest thing, you know, with the customer. It's like, you know, look, you're not going to be left in the cold if something happens. You know, I'm not going to throw my hands up and say, oh, well, you know, tough luck. See ya. My partners that I choose, whether it's HP or Ruckus or whoever, they're going to stand behind their products and we're going to get them taken care of.
There's that word again, partners. you're right. And for me, I think, and what I was saying to you earlier was, I'm good with, as long as something does what I need it to do, and 9 out of 10 times, I do not sell people something that I don't use personally or we don't use in-house. So as far as I'm concerned, I test it out. And as long as it does what it needs to do, you're fine with me until there's an issue, right? That doesn't get resolved or, you know, hey, I need that replacement hard drive for something that's under warranty. It should be here tomorrow. Next thing you know, you're telling me 7 days. So until I have those issues, you're good with me. I keep you in the loop, and your products are performing. So obviously there are so many different products out there, you know, you have to have some level of standardization in your environment, in your networks, because right, we're maintaining so many different clients and going in and trying to figure out what everybody else is doing it's not good for anybody. So yeah, and all of us have our stacks, right? You know, yes, everybody has their stacks. My stack's different than your stack, and it's different than the next person, and that's fine. And I tell people when I go into a new prospect, oh, this guy's using that. I said, listen, everyone's got their stuff they use. I'm not going to tell you that one is better than the other. But if I'm supporting you, it's in our best interest to put in the products that we support.
Right.
All right. It's just that simple.
All right. Well, we could keep on talking, but I just looked at the clock and you're going to need to get to the airport soon, my friend. So we probably should end this and try to go out and enjoy a little bit of the Florida sun that you hate so much.
That's all right, man. For you, you know, I got my sunblock on, and if you see me, you'll understand the joke. So I'm ready to go.
All right. Well, my friend, thank you for stopping in, and it was good visiting with you, before the podcast we did here. Great to have you, in the office. And, Chad, where are you?
Listen, Chad, we're here. You're not.
Hi, my friend. Thank you very much. So ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Stanley Lussant, who is down from New Jersey, visiting here and just chatting. Nothing really major going on, so we thought we'd hang out here. And thank you for listening and downloading the show. You'll have stuff in the show notes if you want to go look and see about the things we talked about. And I'll have another show for you real soon. And until then, holla.